This is the Linda Steele Show on demand. Subscribe now on iTunes and listen weekdays 2 to 6 on 980 CKNW and on the Radio Player Canada app.
So many interesting things going on in the news today that surround animals.
Yep.
We found out that the Trump administration has sort of wheeled back the idea of being able, now you can bring your trophy head elephant heads back into America.
Oh, Donald Trump Jr. is going to love that.
Yeah, the Obama administration said you couldn't. Trump's rolled that back. And there's one that associated with BC as well. Do you remember that documentary about the aquarium here?
Yep.
And it wasn't super flattering about the idea of cetaceans being in the aquarium.
No, it was super honest, yeah.
This is just a clip of it. It was called Uncovered.
And I mean, there have been rumors for years that they have been doing this, but this is the first time I've actually seen a document.
It's a for-profit industry. It's an entertainment industry.
Now, the Vancouver Aquarium did not like that documentary, and they had actually earlier won a court case to force the filmmaker to take 15 segments of the documentary out that they thought caused the aquarium harm. And now the BC Court of Appeal has ruled in favor of the filmmaker, basically saying that he could put that stuff back in. So because we have so much animal news today, we wanted to bring in Rebecca Bretter, who's an animal law lawyer at Bretter Law. And thanks for coming in, Rebecca.
Hi, good afternoon.
What are your thoughts on this documentary? Because I think we talked about it at the time. What do you think about this court decision?
Well, first of all, the documentary I think is amazing because it really does point out the truth behind what it's like to be a cetacean in captivity and the science behind it and essentially how cruel and wrong it is. The court case itself, just to be clear, this was an injunction. So the court case, it's trial. It's still planned to go ahead. We'll see if it does, given the BC Court of Appeal decision yesterday. So the injunction was just something that happened kind of in the middle of the court proceedings, in the middle of trial, and the Vancouver Aquarium was trying to get the entire documentary actually removed from online. But then when he appeared in front of the judge, they said, okay, well, maybe not the entire documentary, but 15 segments and 15 pictures specifically.
Do you know what it was that the aquarium was upset about?
Well, they essentially what they're arguing is that it's copyright infringement. So the 15 segments were specifically pictures of whales and dolphins at the Vancouver Aquarium. But what's so interesting is that a lot, if not most of these pictures that they were complaining about were not even taken by the Vancouver Aquarium. They were taken by other photographers, including Gary Charbonneau, who is the documentary filmmaker.
So how does this cause potentially the aquarium irreparable harm?
Well, that was one of the issues in the court application. And what the original Chambers judge, that's the first judge that heard the injunction, she said, well, the Vancouver Aquarium says in their affidavit that they will suffer irreparable harm and that it's really impossible to calculate what that damage would be. And so the judge took that as evidence that, well, okay, they're going to suffer irreparable harm. But what the Court of Appeal said in yesterday's decision is, well, that's not really evidence of any, quote, irreparable harm. You have to show more. Like, are you going to show attendance is going to drop? Are donations going to drop?
Was Charbonneau's argument that of him including those photos in that was of overwhelming public interest, so people would want to see that? Is that what his argument was going into that?
Right. I mean, what Gary Charbonneau was essentially arguing is that you have to allow freedom of expression on a matter that is of huge importance to the public. I mean, it's no secret. The cetacean issue is a huge debate in Vancouver. Yeah. Lots of people agree that
everyone has an opinion on it.
Everyone has an opinion for and against. But the point is, and this is what the Court of Appeal really clarified yesterday, is that you have to consider freedom of expression when you're considering injunctions. And in this particular case, by claiming copyright and saying that, well, it's going to cause damage without any evidence behind it, what you're essentially doing in this case is that you would be shutting down the freedom of expression that Gary Charbonneau and many other people have on this topic.
So where's it at now then?
So now the Court of Appeal said that the movie in its entirety can be online. And from what I understand, all of the segments are going to be put back and the movie will be available online. Now the next step is to see if the trial is going to proceed.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm confused about where we're at with the cetaceans. Is the aquarium still suing the park board?
Yeah. Okay. So there are two ongoing lawsuits involving the Vancouver Aquarium. One is this one that we just talked about involving the filmmaker, and that's an actual trial. So Vancouver Aquarium is suing the filmmaker on the basis of copyright, which is also a bit of a tangent, but I have to say this. It's a bit interesting because they're not suing the filmmaker in defamation, which is what often documentary producers are sued for, right?
So they're just suing him for copyright?
They're suing for copyright, which is really interesting. So in my view and in a lot of other people's views who are really into looking behind what this lawsuit means, what I really think is that this is a defamation suit but
dressed up
and covered up to really look like copyright.
And what are they saying the points of copyright are? Is it the pictures again? Or?
Yes, it's the pictures, it's the video clips, and
now, you said that one of the pictures was taken by Gary Charbonneau, the director himself.
Yes.
So does that mean that if I went to the aquarium and, say, I took a photo of a cetacean and I put that on my social media, that the aquarium could come after me for copyright infringement for taking a photo on their property?
That's exactly what they did in this case.
That's insanity.
And that is one of the reasons why, thank you, that's exactly why we think it is insanity.
It sounds vexatious.
Well, I mean, quite frankly, in my view, it totally is vexatious. It, call a spade a spade. If you're unhappy about the documentary, sue in defamation.
Right.
But the reason why they didn't is because, quite frankly, they know that they would be unsuccessful. And quite frankly, the truth behind the cruelty of cetaceans in captivity would come out.
This just makes the aquarium look childish.
Well, I just don't understand even why the marketing department at the Vancouver Aquarium even thought this was a good idea, because they're getting a lot of bad press.
Plus, they're drawing attention to the documentary when a lot of people may not even be aware it exists.
Exactly. So the whole reason for their lawsuit is actually counterintuitive to them. So that's one lawsuit. So the first lawsuit is against the documentary filmmaker, Gary Charbonneau. And then the second lawsuit is the Vancouver Aquarium again, suing the Park Board and the City of Vancouver for passing the recent ban on keeping cetaceans on Vancouver land.
And where's that at?
Well, they started the hearing. So that's not a trial. It's a hearing. It's all done by affidavit evidence and documents and literally thousands of pages. And they started it in October. And my understanding is that it continues in December and will hopefully get a decision within a couple of months after that.
There's a statement here from the Vancouver Aquarium that our producer Catherine has just put in, and they say, "We are disappointed in the outcome of yesterday's decision regarding the injunction to protect Vancouver Aquarium's copyrighted materials from misuse." We just talked about that. "As a not-for-profit," and they always add this line in, "as a not-for-profit marine science center, the 1.2 million students and community members who learn and engage with our conservation stories become stronger advocates for our oceans." So I don't know about that.
Oh, don't get me started.
Okay, well, let's pause on that note because we want to talk elephants when we come back.
Yeah, Rebecca Bretter is here, animal law lawyer from Bretter Law in studio with Steel and Drex. It's News Talk 980 CKNW.
Welcome back. We are talking to Rebecca Bretter. She's an animal law lawyer at Bretter Law. And again, thanks for coming in on this gloomy day, Rebecca.
My pleasure.
Couple of interesting animal stories today. The Trump administration has actually just lifted a ban that used to prohibit hunters who shot elephants, in Africa from importing their heads as trophies. The Trump administration has reversed a 2014 rule that was put in by the Obama White House. So that means that if you were hunting in Zimbabwe or Zambia, you could actually bring the heads back. And the Trump administration said, well, the reason they were okay with this is because they felt that the hunting and management programs in those areas would enhance the survival of the species in the wild. So, Rebecca, a lot of people are going, what? Come on. This seems like going backwards.
It is totally going backwards. And it does not take rocket science to say that if you're killing an animal, how does that promote and ensure conservation? It's completely counterintuitive, to say the least. If you want to ensure the survival of a species, I'm pretty sure you need to keep them alive. And doing so means...
Really? That seems crazy.
And you know what? I could just add a hot reading tip in here. If you want to know how good it is to keep species alive and flourishing, read the story about how they introduced foxes back into Yosemite National Park.
Oh, I did read that.
And
was it wolves?
Yeah, it was wolves, sorry. Yeah. They introduced wolves back into the park, and within 10, 15 years, certain parts of the park that were dying off were now flourishing again because of the natural hunter and prey thing going on in the wilderness.
Right, right. But going back to the elephants here, it's really, to say the least, it's sad. It's really, it's devastating. There's no question that their numbers in the wild are decreasing to the point that now I think they're estimating about 350,000 animals are left in the wild compared to millions of them that used to exist at the beginning of the century.
I know someone who is a big game hunter, and they strongly feel that they are helping manage, that there's a cull, that sometimes there's too many, and that this is helping them, you know, give money to the people who are living there and sort of managing the trophy hunting sort of, I don't know, industry, and that money's going back into villages.
Well, the reality is that you could get a lot more financial benefit by keeping the animals alive in the long run. So you could see them, and you could keep coming back and taking pictures. And you could charge maybe not the same outrageous rates for that one trip, but people are going to come back and they're going to see the same animal or the same family. And there's absolutely no reason in today's day why you need to go and shoot, especially an animal like an elephant that is known to be social and intelligent. And not only did you know that elephants, and this is coming out with some of the lawsuits that are starting now in the United States with personhood, which we may talk about, but elephants, not only can they know about their present and remember the past, but there's evidence now showing that they could actually plan for the future.
What? So, how so?
Well, in the same way that we can, right? We look ahead, we plan for the future, and they found scientists who have been studying elephants in the wild for many, many years are starting to see that, wow, there's this remarkable ability for these animals to not only know that they're alive and to have like just some basic instincts, but they have the intelligence to actually plan for the future. Anyway, I mean, for me, the bottom line is that it is absolutely disgusting for anyone to go and to shoot an animal like that just so that they could stick the animal on their wall or take a picture. And the argument that, oh, well, the villagers are going to have meat. Please, there are other ways that you could feed villagers without having to kill these magnificent animals.
This reminds me of the grizzly bear trophy hunt debate here in BC. I assume you don't approve of that.
No, I certainly don't. The good news is that the current BC government is planning to ban trophy hunting on grizzly bears. But, and there always seems to be a but, is what I'm concerned about is that there may be a loophole, which is that it allows the hunting of grizzly bears for food.
Right.
And do people really eat grizzly bears?
Now, we've heard from some people who say, yes, that they do eat the meat. But, you know, I agree with you. It is a loophole that can be exploited.
Absolutely.
Now, Drex brought something to the table that had to do with elephants getting personhood. What does that mean?
Yeah. Do you know much about this?
Yes, yes. It's a super, super interesting case. So this is by this is being brought by an organization in the United States called the Non-Human Rights Project. And it's led by a lawyer whose name is Stephen Wise. And he's been fighting for animal rights for decades now. But he's bringing lawsuits on behalf of a different species starting a few years ago. They started with chimpanzees in New York, have not been really successful, and now recently filed a lawsuit on behalf of elephants who are being used for roadside traveling circuses. Mm-hmm. And zoos. And really, what legal personhood means is that it's just trying to obtain fundamental rights for animals in the legal system. That does not mean giving the right to vote or the right to marry or the right to, you know, to
thank you for saying
shopping.
That because we would have got emails. We would have got emails.
So that's not what it means. What it really means is that it's trying to recognize that animals and certain species of animals especially have a basic right to autonomy and liberty, bodily liberty.
And worth mentioning too, in March of this year, the Whanganui River in New Zealand got person status in that country because the river had been treated so badly for so long, and the Maori population in New Zealand said, no, this is something that is important to our culture. So it now has two guardians, it has a budget and everything. And
see,
it's
that's
considered
what I was going to say, is you'd clearly have to have someone acting on behalf of the elephants if they got personhood.
Yes. Yeah, but there's a way around that. And what I really hope listeners understand, because I understand that there would be a lot of skepticism, well, why giving animal rights? That's ludicrous. We already give corporations rights. They have the right to bring legal actions in court.
There you go. Good point.
Well, isn't that interesting? Okay, well, we've had a good conversation about elephants on a dreary day in Vancouver.
Rebecca Bretta, lawyer with Bretta Law, in studio with us. Thank you so much. Always good to see you as well.
Thanks for coming
in. Thank you. Always fun.
Thank you for listening to the Linda Steele Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. And join the conversation. You can reach me on Twitter at Steele Talk, on Facebook, and by email, linda@cknw.com. Talk to you next time.